Hello and welcome to Architecture Masters, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture, with me, Owen Wainhouse.
Okay, just to check the levels, just maybe say who you are and what you do.
Kate Goodwin, I'm Head of Architecture and Drew Hines Curator at the Royal Academy of Arts.
On the programme this week is Kate Goodwin. Kate studied architecture at the University of Sydney and also as an exchange student at McGill University in Montreal. After finishing university, in 2003, Kate left her native Australia and moved to London. Following a brief stint temping in various roles, including at the BBC, she started work as Architecture Programme Coordinator at the Royal Academy of Arts. Over the intervening 14 years, Kate rose steadily through the ranks, going on to become both the Academy's Drew Hines Curator of Architecture and Head of the Architecture Programme. In this week's episode, we talk about conceiving and curating the widely acclaimed Sensing Spaces exhibition. We talk about the Royal Academy's 250th anniversary and David Chipperfield's plans for their new architecture centre. We also find out about the upcoming Renzo Piano exhibition. We consider what London has gained from Sydney and what Sydney has learned from Melbourne. And we talk about the interplay between art and architecture. Finally, we discuss gender in the field of architecture and how a better built environment requires a better gender balance, not just amongst those who create architecture, but also those who are responsible for its commissioning, financing and planning. I joined Kate in the imposing and slightly intimidating Grand Assembly Room, where I started by asking how long she'd been at the Royal Academy of Arts.
14 years?
Yes.
Coming up to 15?
No, just 14.
Just 14.
Just 14.
And we'll stay at 14.
14 2 weeks ago, yeah.
So it's a big anniversary next year for
yes.
The RA and for you. But you started here as a coordinator, did
you? Yeah, that's right. It was, my title then was Architecture Programme Coordinator.
Okay. And you've enjoyed it here? You've stayed? I mean, it's was that the first job in the UK? So you're originally from Australia?
Yes, yeah.
Can I hear the accent?
Right. It's there sometimes. more prevalent after a glass or two of wine, I suspect. But yeah, I had an opportunity to come over here to the UK, and I guess, you know, I trained as an architect and I yeah. really loved it, and I think it's an incredible education for anybody. You know, it covers the kind of humanities, the sciences, sort of technical side of things, art, creative practice. And then, you know, to find so I love the degree, and I was the daughter of an architect.
Right.
So it was kind of familiar to me, something I knew very much about. And I in some ways slightly fell into it and wanted to sort of not necessarily fall straight into the profession. You know, I could see, you know, I watched my father run his own practice for 40 years and the stresses
wow.
that
okay.
takes. And, you know, sort of this path, it's a very professionally driven, or it certainly yeah. was where I was studying. It was a very professionally driven degree. And it was that sense that you would come out, you would work in practice. And just wasn't sure whether I wanted that path, and not that I didn't want it, but I wanted to see what else was there. And
first,
actually coming
right.
to the UK offered the opportunity to sort of stretch and to think differently, and I thought, you know, I'd do something else for a year or two.
Yeah. And then go back and
then
become an architect.
Go back to Australia, be an architect, and I should say 14 years later I'm
yeah.
still here.
But you did, so you did what I guess is the equivalent of part one, an undergraduate degree in Sydney, but then stayed on to do a BA, to do part two.
Yeah, I did do the part two.
So it must have been pretty serious about going on
oh,
to
yeah.
become. Yeah.
I think I was. You know, I really loved architecture and I enjoyed design, and I was, you know, I was relatively,
yeah.
I think, good at it. You know, I did quite well on it. And I did the 3-year degree. I then took 2 years travelling, and it was a time when it used to be, in Australia, it was a sort of enforced thing that you had to take a year in practice.
Right.
And then with some changes in the economy, it became difficult to enforce it, so they said that you could go straight through, but I wanted to have a little bit of time out of study, and I travelled, I thought would be again for a year, and it ended up being two.
That was the kind of overseas.
Thing. And I, you know, for the first, I don't know how long, I denied any architectural things. I was doing everything else. But then, you know, just the wonderful thing of suddenly being exposed to buildings you'd been seeing and seeing in books and experiencing them yourself. And, you know, it was slow travel. And I took my time and I worked in different places as I went. And then went back to Sydney, and I was kind of quite concerned that some of my fellow students who had been in practice would be so much more ahead of me, you know, and I'd struggle suddenly in that second degree. But I was really surprised to find that it wasn't the case at all. That something that had happened in that 2 years just to digest and to think about architecture was in some ways had really put me ahead of those who'd been sitting in practice. And so I did the second degree and really enjoyed it. I also did in that time an exchange to McGill because I was really interested in Alberto Perez Gomez, who was teaching over there. There was relatively few places I could have gone that spoke English and that was an exchange. McGill was one place I could, and it was to study with him that I wanted to do it. And so his theory lectures, which were, I mean, I'd love to be able to do them again, they were really dense and it was great. So I did that as an exchange in that second degree, and then also did a dissertation at the same time, sort of, which was looking at architectural photography. So it was a kind of fairly busy, crazy last year. Yeah. I packed it all in, but yeah, it was sort of.
And where's McGill's in Toronto?
Montreal.
Okay.
It's an amazing city, actually. Very, you know, kind of mixed between Northern American and European. A really nice scale, cultural energy. I really enjoyed it, except I was lured over there in what they call their spring term, and I went from
Sydney to
from 35 degrees in Sydney in December to minus 20 in Montreal in the 1st of January. It was a bit of a rude shock to the system.
Spring term, that's a nice way of putting it. So back to did you do any time then in practice? Did you have, I mean, was there a kind of...
I worked for my father during the first degree and before I went travelling. His partner unfortunately had a heart attack just when they were going into quite a major stage of contract documentation for a big resort they were working on. And I just finished my studies and was looking forward to a nice summer, and so within a day sort of got roped into going in and working on the contract documents for this project. And it was really interesting actually to sort of see it through at that level of detail. So I did that for a period of time, and then went travelling and came back, continued to work a bit for Dad, various things, which is never straightforward. I'm sure many people have worked for their parents. You know, it's great because it's enlightening, you get to know them different and you develop a different engagement with it, but in some ways their expectations of you are quite high, and they sort of forget what it's like when you're 3 years into your study, not, you know, 50 years into your practice. And then after university, I worked for one of my tutors for a while, who was just a sole practitioner on some quite beautiful houses in Sydney. But at the time, it just wasn't quite what I wanted to be doing. And as I said, this opportunity came up to come over here.
And was that directly for the RA?
No, it was a family, personal thing, and so I just thought, I'm going to leap, and I leapt. Yeah. It was quite quick, actually. It was only within a couple of weeks I made the decision, up ship, and came over here.
Okay.
Not certain I was going to stay. You know, I took out my visa. I attempted at the BBC for a while. I was looking at doing some jobs as a photographic assistant. Yeah. And I was looking everywhere, really, and I think it was kind of an amazing thing that architecture does give you that ability to branch off into lots of stuff. We certainly had some really nice courses we could do at university. Like I did a photography course, I did a film course, I did ceramics. My pots were not the best, I've got to say. You know, all those things that just are really lovely. You know, it's kind of
broader creativity.
Really broader creativity. And so I guess I was sort of sparked and inspired by that. And also, I guess when I was at McGill, when you are doing an exchange, there's a slight freedom in what you're doing too. You know, you're not quite, I didn't have to, because all of the points didn't quite correlate from one course to the other. So we sort of, there's no doubt a fudge in the middle of it. But I got really involved in a gallery, a sort of gallery project they had there, which was run by the students to kind of talk about architecture. I remember us doing an installation in a lift, in the lift in the building with some artists. And it was so, and I really loved it. And that was an opportunity that wasn't available at Sydney at the time. I think it is now, actually, at Sydney University. But it was those kind of things that just gave me a sort of taster for other things outside of architecture.
And then on to the RA, I guess one of Britain's most hallowed institutions. You know, very, it was sat today in the Grand Assembly Room.
General Assembly Room.
Okay. Yeah. So very, I mean, that must... a young woman from Sydney coming to one of the old institutes must have been a, you know, the kind of ways the institute works. Was that a shock? Was that, I mean, how did you fit kind of culturally into the RA? Was it, did it wrap you up and welcome you? Was it?
Yeah, in some way it was great. You know, I was leaping from Australia into something like this, and actually to grasp something which is so central, I think, to English culture. It was amazing to be in the central of it. And I was working for Marianne Stevens at the time, and she'd really been the one who'd championed architecture. She initially had started the education program when there was none here. Right. She was heading up the collections and libraries. She was curating lots of exhibitions in the galleries. She was a really incredible figure who believed in architecture, but was not just in architecture. So it was working directly for her and with Jeremy Melvin, who was a consultant and had been involved with the Academy and for some time. And they were wonderful to work with, you know. And I think that I realised how fortunate I was to be around those sorts of people and to suddenly sit in a room like this. I think what's interesting about the Academy is the architects really believe in it. They really like being here. It's not something that they have to be a part of. You know, they sit alongside their artist colleagues. Yeah. It's got a social aspect. It's a place where they discuss ideas and, you know, artists they admire, they're suddenly sitting alongside. And there's a really nice feeling about it. And while, you know, there's a number of committees and things that are run here, it means you bring together a lot of people. At that time, the architecture committee was being chaired by Richard McCormack. Right. I mean, he's brilliant. I mean, he's kind of, his knowledge of architecture, of culture, of society was really deep, and it was inspiring. And so that combination of Marianne and Jeremy and Richard was fantastic. So, you know, sit around these meetings with people like Charles Jenks, I've been reading, you know, just at university. Yeah, and you're right, it was kind of like, young girl from Australia. It was great, and I think, you know, it's kept me here. And it's, I think the program has just grown. It's grown through the energy of those people who have been behind it, and because they believe in it, and that's a really nice thing to be a part of. And I don't think we've ever put a ring around what was possible. You know, they just kept doing more and more, even though there wasn't really the resource to do it often.
Right. But now you're one of those people, you know, so head of architecture.
Yeah.
And I guess, I mean, a lot of people listening will know of recent times Sensing Spaces as the big blockbuster. You know, I think head of the Architects Journal called it era defining, you know, one of those, I guess, from, what was it, 1986, the Rogers...
Foster Rogers Sterling.
Kind of exhibition as the previous kind of big... exhibition, and then Sensing Spaces was your idea, your selection of architects. I mean, that's a powerful position to be in fairly quickly, you know, in your career.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that was I'd had a couple of ideas. The RA has, as you said, had the Foster Rogers Sterling show. It then had Living Bridges in the 90s, and had a string of very interesting shows, such as one on John Soane, Tadeo Ando. There was Sky High, which was one room in the summer exhibition in 2003, curated by Foster, which brought together models of skyscrapers essentially from across the world. So some historic, but also a lot larger contemporary. Then we'd had the Palladio show, which Marianne curated, the Building the Revolution show, which was looking at the Russian constructivist architecture. So there'd been a series of them.
But fairly...
But they hadn't... And then the Rogers show in 2013, but they hadn't occupied the main galleries for a long time, you know, actually, as you say, since Foster Rogers Sterling, because in part, I mean, I think a perception that architectural shows are expensive and that people don't come to them. And I think Sensing Spaces showed that that wasn't the case. Yeah. And it was opportune as much as anything else. There was a show, I'd been working up an idea for Asakla Galleries the previous year that wasn't able to go through because of some plant work that happened. And the director of exhibitions at that time, Kathleen Soriano, really encouraged me to put forward a proposal for the main galleries.
So you have to, I mean, you have to sort of bid internally, do you, for...
It was, yeah, I mean, it's every exhibition is decided by a committee that is made up of artists and architects, Royal Academicians. Okay. And there was something that had fallen out of the schedule, because we tend to plan your 5 years at least in advance for those sorts of shows. And then something fell out less than 2 years, sort of 18, 20 months before, because some of the loans didn't come together, or I think it might have been actually been a sort of political situation on that one. And it does happen. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly there was this opportunity and we had to get something together quite quickly. And there was a look for a lot of ideas, and it was then putting various ideas on the table and to see which would thought to be most apt. So I'm not sure whether it's really pitching or it's actually saying, you know, here's an idea, what's going to work.
But you had the idea and you fought for it.
And I had the idea and I presented it in this room.
Right.
very nervously. Yeah. And at one point, you know, I sort of walked away, and then I wasn't sure whether, you know, whether you want it to go through or not. Yeah. It's sort of a moment when you find out it's through, and like, oh gosh, wow.
And now I've got
now
to.
I've got to do it.
Yeah.
It was, you know, so thrilling, and it was a wonderful experience, you know, working with those architects.
And at that stage, did you selected the architect? Was it a kind of an idea in theory, and then you select the architects after, or you had a kind of vague idea?
I had a selection, and from memory, I think only, I can't recall, one or two of them were only went from the initial proposal through and actually were realised as I developed the idea up. Looked at them, architects more, because I had to do it very quickly, the initial proposal. Once I spent more time with it and started to understand it, the list changed and developed in that process.
Okay. And I guess the names, you know, sort of Grafton have gone on to win the Rebus International Prize. Francis Carey is obviously the Sterling, the Serpentine Pavilion. So there's a degree of kind of picking, do you think, selecting... up and coming. I mean, they were established names, I guess, but
I think it's great. You know, it's really exciting to see they've gone on to more and more things, and I'm sure Sensing Spaces was a part of that as part of everything they've been doing. The same with Pezzo von Erichhausen too, who just after that won a very big prize in Chicago and have come to do more great things. And I think it was, I mean, there was a real interest on my side. There was a sense of, I didn't want to just go to those necessarily instantly known public star names, that it was about working with people who had sensibilities that I shared, and that it was a really, the people would give the time to it. And it was incredible, the generosity of time. And, I just think care that they all gave to the project.
And that idea, I mean, I just wondered where that kind of idea formed in your head, the idea of a show on experience and of using senses, you know, is that often people talk about ideas kind of bubbling away, you know, the kind of formative ideas that have come through for such a, it seems perfectly natural when people come into the show that it's about the experience. And I guess that's why it was so kind of critically acclaimed. You know, where do you think the, was it a...
There'd been a... it's never one thing, I don't think, you know, it's never a thing, but things have been bubbling away. And you know, even something really as simple as, you know, I find when you go out, I don't know if you find this, but, you know, you go to a pub or something, mm-hmm. someone will say, what do you do? And I actually say architect because it's way easier than saying curator, you know, like yeah. you say curator, you know. Yeah. So sometimes I just say architect. Yeah. And
hope no one from the ARB is there. We always say,
exactly.
yeah.
It's fine, yeah. I'm Australian architect, yeah, that's yeah. right. But quite often, you know, people's faces light up and they go, oh, I always want to be an architect. Yeah. Or they say, I love architecture, but I don't know anything about yeah. it. Or very quickly, people defer of a sense of connection to it. Mm. But when you start to talk to them, you find that they know a lot more than they think they do. They yeah. can be quite sophisticated about their conversations about mm. space or what they like and aspects of it, about how they feel in certain things, that when you probe it, there is something that might not have kind of been digested properly, mm. but they've got antenna up to certain yeah. stuff. And so that kind of struck me, and that I think we do carry knowledge like that, but actually yeah. being able to draw that out and people say, yeah. you know, you do know about that. You know, why don't you like that space? Because it's too, you know, what are all the components that either make yeah. you feel one way or other or respond to it? And is it as simple as that you don't like the colour or something? Actually, no, it's not. It's quite mm. often something else that's being triggered in it. And that when you draw that out, people, I think, are very sophisticated and yeah. know more than they think they do. And so that was kind of an underlying drive in it. And I had an experience where I was with an architect and had a wonderful conversation for, you know, 2 hours of doing an interview like yeah. this. Actually, you know, it was probably better than this, sorry, but it was a great interview and for a magazine. And it was fascinating hearing them talk about their work.
Yeah.
And it was a conversation with Peter Sumptor, whose work I'd admired for a long time. But it was interesting how he spoke so much about, you know, actually his words are very powerful about how he talks about some of these ideas about atmosphere. And I found I walked out of this conversation just, and how I looked around things afterwards, it just sort of changed. I noticed things that I hadn't, and all those antennae were suddenly up, you know, when you have yeah, something, it was yeah. just really lovely. And I realised that, you know, we can just have our antennae turned
yeah.
in moments. Yeah. And it's often that we just don't become aware, we don't become yeah. present in what we are. And yeah. actually, how do you shift that? So I think those are kind of, I wouldn't say they're inspiration, but those are sort of mm. things that you go back to as I was sort of developing it. And I am struck by how the kind of experience can become a secondary conversation
yeah.
in architecture. And it's not, you know, as architects we often very much justify projects in terms of other worth, which is exactly how it yeah. should be. You know, architecture does do a whole lot of things, but actually through the experience it also does have very strong social agenda as well, mm-hmm. and it is actually how we experience something which plays a part of that. And I just felt quite often, particularly, you know, the modes of communication, which are through image,
yeah.
Yeah. it's very difficult to communicate what it's like. I mean, the number of buildings that I know that have surprised me in different ways yeah. when you visit them. You know, they're not what you think they are through yeah. photographs. There's a certain amount you can understand through a plan and all things, but there's something else that happens when you're there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, there's a few things you talked about, a little bit about next year and the 250th anniversary. Large part of Burlington House at the back is closed off for work now. And I guess there was a big announcement earlier on this year about a new architecture space, and presumably you've been hugely involved in securing that. It's an ambitious project, you know, marking a change in the RA's support for and attitude to architecture, maybe.
Yep. No, it's a really fantastic one. I mean, I've been here, as you say, a while, and you know, I was here when the first projects, you know, we bought Burlington Gardens, you know, almost 20 years ago. Mm. And since then there's been this long conversation about how to connect the two buildings, first with a proposal by Michael Hopkins, yeah. then with a proposal by Sandy Wilson that went down the side, a very mm. sensitive scheme, and then this one with David Chipperfield, which connects the two buildings right mm. through the centre. And it's been very interesting actually being part of those conversations, actually seeing how the RA, you know, being a client in,
yeah,
that, in that process.
Absolutely.
And, you know, after all of this time, we're now, as you say, you know, we're not far off that building being opened. And I mean, the building initially was actually bought with the idea that it might be a centre for architecture.
Right.
So kind of the thought about architecture has been something around this building for a long time. And there's been numerous ideas about it. I mean, what excites me about it is also the fact it's bringing a lot of things together, that architecture is just a part of it. You know, I think it's in some ways, I like the fact it's not just a centre for architecture. It's actually, it is, you know, the Royal Academy is about art and architecture. Yeah. It's about how they come together. Sometimes we can put more of a spotlight on architecture than on others, and that's a really, to my mind, actually very nice. Mm. It's important that it's seen as sort of part of an important part of sort of our cultural life and social life. And so next year we will have a permanent space, which is, it was really driven by Lloyd Dorfman, who had been interested in giving a gift to the Royal Academy to aid in this Capitol building. So it's a building project.
Yeah.
And he was looking at supporting the building in that. But as he says, he doesn't want to just support a building project. Mm. He actually likes to sort of see the sustained life of what's going to happen in there and making a change, as he did down with Travel Acts down at the National Theatre with those £10 tickets, which is a really important thing. And so actually, you know, he looked at the Academy and said, architects have a really important role here. They are part of those who lead the institution, but yet they're often a lot less represented, or people are less aware that actually the RA is essentially an academy for art and architecture. And, you know, he went down to the ramp and he said a couple of fairly disparaging things about it, which is, you know, it's a challenging and interesting space. You know. And he felt it was a bit of a token gesture. And so it's as much been, you know, supporting and saying, you know, architecture is important to everybody. It's something that affects our lives. You as a big cultural institution should be championing that more. And that alongside the RA's, at the same time, the RA had also made a commitment ourselves, you know, it very much came from the academy, the academicians and the institution to say that we want to assure that architecture is part of the exhibition program as well. So they made a commitment, the RA has made a commitment to have a yearly exhibition on architecture within the program. And so it's no longer that thing of pitching architecture against other things. It's actually architecture will be here, and what will that program look like over sort of 5 years? Mm. So I think it's really encouraging, actually. It has come from the institution, echoed by somebody else. Yeah. And I think it's a general sign, actually, that architecture is really important to everybody. You know, and I think that it's the rise of more programs around architecture, the engagement, say, of, you know, the number of people who come to the London Festival of Architecture. Yeah. It is something that isn't just a professional concern. No, it is
a wider,
much wider. And a wide, I think it's some, you know, broad interest as well. And so I see that sort of happening alongside, you know, we are part of that.
Yeah.
And there's more opportunity. So there'll be a studio, an architecture studio, which is kind of a space which is between being, you know, it's not a space of display, it's actually a space to come and engage with architectural ideas as they sort of intersect with contemporary culture. It's in one of the big, one of the grand find rooms in Burlington Gardens alongside the cafe. And that interests me in that it places architecture in a very social context.
Yeah.
You know, and hopefully people will come from the bar space, walk with their drink into it, both as a destination, but also those who just come to the academy and actually, you know, you wander in and you discover it. And we're really thinking about that space as something that does engage with sort of contemporary issues that will relate to everybody. And it's got a great big window that looks up New Burlington Street. So, you know, the connection is made quite clearly with the city and with architecture outside. We've then got a 260-seat top-lit lecture theatre that is just adjacent to that. So suddenly all of our lectures come on site.
Yeah.
You know, and after that you sort of flow upstairs to the bar into this space. And then, you know, for a third of the year there's an architectural show in the new Gabriella Junkler Winkler galleries there.
Okay.
And we just announced yesterday that the first show will be Renzo Piano. So it's a kind of idiot.
And that's your choosing?
Yeah.
Your choice?
Yeah. It came about something that we thought, not personally, you know, I think it came from a general consensus that it would be quite good to launch with a figure like Renzo, who is, you know, significantly changed London as well as places across the globe. And there's a lot of, I find him, he's very interesting. He talks a lot about the dignity of the profession and about the possibilities it offers. And his work has a lot of variety. And, you know, from the really early experimental projects he did in the late 60s, which got a lot of traction here, as much as they've been picked up in Italy, but it was some work, you know, shown at the AA in the late 60s. And it was sort of London where that got a sort of different airing, and where he met Rogers, and out of that came the Pompidou Centre.
And do you think, I mean, London's changed, I mean, even in the time you've been in London, London's changed kind of dramatically.
The food's better.
Yeah. Well, you've brought the coffee with you, the Australian coffee and Australian wine, maybe. I mean, it's, London's infinitely better for that. But do you think a lot of those regeneration's been so busy? Yeah, there's been so much regeneration in London. Does that make it harder now, do you think, for some, you know, some of the things you're talking about, the influence that that piano was having on cities, when there are fewer spaces left to be regenerated, you know, fewer, do you think that kind of slows the
don't all places need and open to different aspects or amounts of renewal?
Maybe.
I don't know. I think that all places are, everything always undergoes certain degrees of flux, and you know, I think it's quite nice. You can, whether it's at a particular scale. I mean, some of the scale of some things might have changed, but you know, you look at some areas of London that are changing now; they are huge. I mean, it's vast on a scale that probably hasn't been seen since post-war. I mean, some of the areas that have been developed in East London,
it's massive,
are staggering.
Yeah.
You know, Old Oak Common. I mean, the scale of that.
Yeah.
Now, these are 20, 30 year projects. So I don't
think
that
they're big. I mean, maybe are they're big professional projects, maybe. I just kind of wonder whether small, emerging practice. Again, the RA, you're bringing in an emerging architecture award. So those younger architects, do you think, still able to engage in the profession or get their big break?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's widely acknowledged it's very difficult, particularly here, particularly because of the competition system. It takes, I think, a courageous developer.
Yeah.
You know, quite often, because these are in the private, in the, you know, they are being developed privately. You know, I think some of the councils or the public bodies are getting better at doing it. I mean, you know, some really great stories about a couple of the local authorities doing some good things. And it does take courage. And, you know, if we become too risk averse in whatever we do, you know, it's I notice it in conversations everywhere. You know, we have to, by supporting younger, different practices. And, it's, experience is important, but experience can be gained, you know, with support from other places.
And how much do you sort of keep in touch with architecture in Australia, in Australia, in kind of, you know, what's Sydney like as a city for the practice of architecture now? And obviously, you know, I suppose growing up with, you know, icons like the Sydney Opera House and that, you know, real defining attitude of architecture to a city, to a country. Peter Murray, I talked to a couple of months ago, was talking about, I think he wrote a book even on the Opera House. I just wonder whether the kind of differences with cities, and are there any notable differences as former Sydney sider?
I think something, former Sydney sider, my heart's still a bit in Sydney. I think the thing about Sydney is it's extraordinarily beautiful. I mean, naturally beautiful, as well as buildings like the Opera House. And it's, you know, the harbour, the topography of it, the harbour, makes it, you know, quite a rare and a unique city. I mean, I don't know of many others that are like it in terms of some of that. And, you know, its own beauty is something that I think it's just a part of it. It's in some ways, I think the architecture in Sydney has become in recent years less interesting than, say, Melbourne, which is a much less beautiful city. But the buildings are, much more courageous and more interesting than what we're seeing in Sydney or what I've recently seen. But I think some of the architecture in Sydney, the good architecture is very good, and the not-so-good architecture is really bad and disheartening. Right. And in some ways it's not the kind of... London kind of absorbs some of that better than a newer city like Sydney might.
Right. And is that, I mean, Melbourne, is that just a more enlightened local, you know, sort of kind of city government? Is that...
I don't know enough about where it's coming from. Whether it is about planning regulations, they certainly changed a lot of their planning regulations to use the lanes and to license differently.
Right.
Okay. So it changed the grain of the city, which is then something that's been echoed and mirrored by Sydney to sort of...
learn from that to learn, local animation of, of smaller...
of smaller sort of initiatives. And I think that that... So that's changed and made a lot. I mean, I haven't kept up as much with Australia as I... as I would like to, but I think there is, what I did note was a very different relationship between architects and developers there, and that was happening when I was coming out of university. So a lot of people I was trained with did go and work for developers like Denleys. They were taking young architecture graduates into the development. So it wasn't, and it wasn't seen to be, you know, crossing to the other side necessarily. Yeah. And I think there's implicitly a different relationship that exists. I mean, it's, you know, it's, there's always going to be tensions in it, but it seems to be different from what I have noted here. And I think we need much more sophisticated conversations between developers and architects, because it's not, we are working to the same aims, or we should be.
And then your work, I mean, you were saying a little bit about the obviously David Chipperfield working on the extension in Burlington Gardens. How involved are you? Are you obviously head of architecture? Do you get, are you just looking at the exhibitions? Are you, how involved, you know, as a client, are you able to kind of input into what you wanted to see in some of the new, the kind of cafes and things?
I input it at moments. I mean, the project has a client committee which is made up of some Royal Academicians. It's been chaired by Roger Sokolovich for a long period of time. But there is a client committee, which also Chris Wilkinson has been very involved in. I can't remember all the committees because there are a number of them. But you know, it has been championed by and working with people like that. And I haven't, I've been variously at some of those things, but I certainly haven't been consistently involved in it, and have input at certain moments and followed it. And so it's something that's gone through.
I mean, as a client as well, I guess, when you selected architects for Sensing Spaces, it must have been it's been difficult. Must have been, you know, times of challenge, or of, you know, seven architects all wanting to do slightly different things, kind of in terms of reining them in, keeping them on. Was that a...
No, it never. It actually never really was. I mean, I think what I found, one of the hardest things about being a client is having the courage to step out of things and to kind of to work with the architect, to trust them, to make sure that you enable them the space to do what they want, and to encourage more from them, to push their ideas. With my relationship with each of them was slightly different, simply because of who they were and the time that they had and how it developed. Some of them it was very close. It spoke a lot, was very involved in the process, which, I mean, someone like Percival and Erikhaus, and I went to Chile and we had four really intense days of working together, you know, of me trying to talk about the ideas, them responding, this really strong dialogue that was then sometimes just a discussion about ideas, and then sometimes it would formulate into some form of proposal, and it was, they would pick up the pencil sometimes later, sometimes otherwise, and they kind of resolved or settled to the structure that they'd come to. I mean, it changed a bit, but it reached a point where I'd become such a part of that discussion that any changes subsequent to that, I understood we were involved with it.
Right.
So it closed that gap. If they suggested something, I knew where that leap had taken place, and I could support it, or we could. And they quite often said, you know, we're thinking about this. What are your thoughts? We're still working it up, and they were open to an input, and it wasn't tell us what to do. It was much more a thing of sharing, and I would sometimes guide and might give an opinion, but very often leaving it to them, you know, to seek. And, you know, they had the kind of whole thing of what they wanted in their heads. And there was, you know, there's sometimes moments where all projects hit, where I think they hit against budget, they hit against practicality. Yeah. You realise sort of things that fire regulations and visitors come into it, particularly with an exhibition, you know, suddenly it is different from a from a building. There is floods of people in certain periods of time. Like, it operates quite differently. So it was then I was a sort of mediator between the institution of understand
what you can and can't do.
And what audience, what an exhibition audience does and how they are. And then it was a bit of pushing back and also saying, but actually this is a different sort of show, so they might, how do we encourage them to behave differently? And it was a very, you know, I think it was fascinating for everybody involved. I mean, I think people, it's what's really nice about it is, one, the architects are still really positive about the show, and colleagues internally are really positive about it, just having enjoyed working on it. You know, the marketing team, they had to rethink everything.
How they worked and how they engaged with
audiences. How we communicate, what we do. Yeah. And it was really good. And you know, the Academy has changed a lot in the last couple of years anyway, you know, I mean, parallel to it.
I guess it was about the time when, you know, people were beginning more mainstream kind of social media use and, you know, to be encouraged within gallery spaces for...
Well, part of the reason we generally can't have any photographs in galleries is because loan conditions by lenders.
Right.
So it's lenders. So a lot of places like the National Gallery, with our own collection, you can enable it to be reproduced and photographed. Yeah. But loan conditions with, you know, a Matisse show, you know, you can't. Yeah. And so a show on architecture suddenly just opened all of that up. It was like, you can take photographs in there, actually you can have food and drink, people can run, they can shout, which is kind of really exciting, which is what happens in architecture. You know, architecture is pretty robust, you know, it's got to be pretty robust. Yeah. So suddenly it was changing that mindset of going, actually, push them to be a bit more like that. So you actually start to think about it as architecture, or if it's this kind of space of only of reverence, then it never steps into the place where it becomes something which pushes back, which I think architecture does.
I'm wondering if the invigilators in the next exhibition after Sensing Spaces were forever running around pulling cans of drink or photos out of people's hands, whether that changes people's mindset really in terms of what you can do in galleries. That's,
and you know, it's tough for invigilators. All they end up doing is saying no to people. I mean, it's a tough job. And that's the nice thing about Sensing Spaces. All they had to do was sort of encourage them,
And there's a program at the RA of other talks and programs throughout the year.
Yeah, events. Absolutely. We've had, which was the program that I sort of came in to start with, the event program, and Owen Hopkins, when he was here, took on that event program and really ramped it up to, there was, you know, one a week, which is something which is being maintained now. You know, we're still doing an event pretty much every Monday night, which includes things from bringing over international, you know, architects from around the world, sometimes, you know, then picking up with some contemporary issues or issues that we think are quite pertinent to discuss. We've got the great opportunity here to sort of draw out what else is happening in the institution. Like, we've got a Dali Duchamp exhibition coming up in this opening in a few weeks, and actually looking at the relationship of architecture and eroticism. You know, so I think, you know, I find it really interesting where you go into a show and you can start having been to a lecture like that, and actually the show becomes different, and having seen the show itself, the conversation that we will have about architecture will be different. So we're always trying to sort of use the wealth of that sort of conversation, so it's not just a conversation that resides with architecture and about architecture, but actually architecture is part of a much broader kind of constellation of ideas.
Right.
Yeah. But I think what's, you know, we've spoken quite a lot, you know, you asked me a bit about my early times here and the development of architecture in the Royal Academy. And what I'm kind of really excited about now is, as well as having these opportunities within the building and within the program, which has just really opened up, actually, you know, we are across, the conversation about architecture is happening across departments, it's happening across places, and, you know,
was
within
it sort of siloed more when you started? Then?
It was much more on the side. And, you know, my initial contract probably may well still be with the collections and library department, And we now have a Department of Architecture, and it's the only department within the institution that is subject-based, because obviously everything else is really about what's produced, exhibitions, learning, marketing, all of those things. It's
so there isn't a modern art department or a kind of classics department. It's just... Right.
It's all about that. And so the nice thing is that we move across everything like that. And we've also now got a team of sort of four people working specifically on architecture. And that, to my mind, is really nice as well. You know, Gonzalo Herrero has just joined us. Okay. Laura Mark is just coming
from the AJ, taking on
all the awards and a lot of other projects as well. And Helen Ickler, who comes from, did the architectural history course at the Bartlett. And and with myself, and that actually having a team of people working on architecture is something great. You know, we had it before in different ways, as I've said, you know, working alongside a lot of other people. But having four people dedicated to architecture, I think just is... It's positive for everybody, and it's a really nice...
I mean, I'm sort of interested in the way you talk about that slightly in a kind of an abstract way, in a sense, that it's nice that happens. That, I mean, you're head of architecture, it's happened because you've made it happen. Do you think, I mean, I'm just kind of interested how, but yeah, there's kind of, you said we a little bit earlier on about, you know, or they, I think maybe about the RA. And I mean, is that... You feel kind of,
I've been institutionalized.
Well, no. I mean, I'm just kind of interested how when you parachute into an organization from outside, you come in at a level, but maybe you know, starting as a coordinator, and
it's really hard and you grow it up. I mean, I think that it's very difficult to separate out things. I think that's something, you know, I've been here 14 years and it grows with you, around you, and part of you. And so, in some ways, I probably do find it quite difficult. And if I was to step away and someone else was to come in, it would be for them much clearer.
Yeah.
And for me, it's just something I've grown up in and with, and it has grown too.
Yeah.
And
that's sort of interesting. I mean,
it's a kind of,
there must be a lot of, in any big organisation, battles, in a sense, you have to fight and to win, and arguments to win. And I guess when you start as a coordinator and you get promoted and you develop a role for yourself within the RA.
Yeah, you know, people like Marianne really championed that. She championed architecture and then she championed people working in it, and she championed me in that context. And so I do just, you know, I can't claim it all, you know, but it's been part of something. And I do think it's an interesting thing about that idea about winning. You know, that's kind of the ultimate goal in some ways. But it's as much about, I think it's about kind of bringing people along, convincing them that architecture is important. And that's what I find really nice now, is that I'm having to justify things less. There's kind of, it's how you can keep talking about architecture. It's important. It is something we should be debating. It should be a part of this institution. And that's happening, and he's just part of it. And, you know, the academicians would believe that always. You know, they're very proud of that, and they will stand up well.
I mean, maybe I'm sort of interested. You're softly spoken, but clearly there's a huge ambition for the programme there. If, you know, maybe personally ambitious as well, maybe I don't know. But in terms of driving something through, does that...
You know, I think that has come from that initial spirit when I arrived here.
Right.
You know, with Richard, Mary and Jeremy, there's always been about, there's a possibility. Everyone has seen the ability to do something here that was different. And, you know, I think the academicians come with that same energy. Yeah. It's a kind of just, you know, there's people just going, go and make something of it.
So you've been surrounded, I mean, say a lot of the architects I've spoken to have talked about, we talked a little bit earlier about formative figures and people, you know, whether in practice, you know, taking people under their wing and helping and giving them often very big jobs at very early stages of their career, and then sort of being trusted to sink or swim on big, you know, big buildings. The sort of, I mean, level of trust that's been afforded to you, you've obviously demonstrated that.
It's nice. And, you know, I think it's there's been a lot of people around who are supportive and who are interesting. And, you know, I think it helps. I mean, Charles Sorrow Smith, someone I haven't mentioned, but he's, you know, he's a brilliant figure on architecture and is a great, his knowledge is extraordinary and he's fantastic. And, you know, he comes to our lectures as the CEO of the Royal Academy, quite often will come to things, engages with it, is interested in the ideas. And that's not something he has to do. It's something he does and wants to do.
Out of interest,
and it's just, I mean, that, it comes a lot. And I, you know, think in a place like the Royal Academy, it's amazing. You are surrounded by lots of really talented and interesting people. I mean, I love going down to the Royal Academy schools. It's one of my favourite things. You know, if I want to escape architecture, I go down and sit with art students who are just doing something on the cutting edge. And I think that that is a difference. And that's something that maybe I have thought about quite a lot here, that ideas are being formulated. Artists are taking risks, putting themselves forward. In when you've got a studio, you know, you're working through the difficult things. And I've learned, you know, I've learned a lot about art and different things. And I'm also, I mean, part of, I'm doing a whole bunch of other stuff as well, oversee our creative programming. I'm commissioning some artists to do some festival staff spaces. Right. Okay. So kind of, I don't know, the job's growing and grows. Yeah. And it's a lot of other stuff. But
and does the Royal Academy, I mean, architecture itself is a very male profession, certainly in the UK. Perhaps a bit of a sexist profession earlier on. Yeah, the Royal Academy is seen, I suppose, as being grand and historic, but does the art side of the Academy, is that more open, do you think? Is that, does that suffer less than architecture as a profession?
Gender is an issue everywhere. It's an issue in every organisation. You get up to a certain place and gender balance changes. I don't think it is specific to architecture at all. I think gender issues are everywhere in how we go. Architecture has it plays out in certain roles, ways, and yes, it's bad, particularly, you know, particularly at the top. You know, there are very few really amazing female or people who are elevated to a place of being a female role model, because there's some brilliant females architects around and who are, I think, getting more and more voice and to whom I look to a lot. You know, it's, I think it's good, but I think it's good to see strength in the female voice everywhere. I mean, I do have, and it's something I'd quite like to pursue a lot more, is actually the fact that, I mean, our built environment and our world is not made by architects. In some ways it's made by the building profession, it's made by the financiers, it's made by developers, and I see a lack of female representation in there. You know, actually in the creative end, there are quite a lot of females who are driving those projects. There's a lot less on the other side who are procuring them. And, I mean, there are some very good ones on the procurement side, but I don't think there's enough. And now, you know, one doesn't underestimate the role of clients in creating great buildings. And they're, I think, female underrepresented there more so than in architecture. And I think it's something we really need to think about. And you know, it's everywhere. It's, and it's not an issue for women either. I think it's a kind of, it's an issue for society that gender balance is kind of positive, and the differences, tensions, all that aspect is a really good thing.
And is that something the RA school, you know, this kind of schools program, is that, you know, what are the ways of fixing that? You know, how can the RA contribute?
Well, the RA is increasingly championing or assuring that there is much more female artists being shown. Mm. You know, it's a slow process. And as you say, you know, it's an old institution, and it has, you know, in terms of the academicians, it's still, you know, still females are not, it's certainly not 50-50 in terms of the artists.
No.
You know, artists and architects, and but that is being redressed, and I think it's a slow process, but it's being positively activated everywhere. We've got shows by women coming up. Got a Tessa Dedeen show next year as well. So solo artists are having their way, and there's more in the pipeline, and so I think it's, I can feel it happening around me everywhere, and it's, you know, which is good, and the conversation is taking place, and I think if the conversation takes place, that's a good start.
That's interesting. It's fascinating. It's So Renzo Piano is the next exhibition, your next big flagship exhibition. Yeah. When's the launch scheduled for? When about next year?
Spring.
Yeah. Okay.
And as you said,
warmer than a Montreal spring.
Much warmer. I hope, yeah. And as you said, the new award program as well, which is sort of under movement now, which is great.
So two awards will be announced then. One for sort of lifetime achievement award, is it?
An enduring contribution, I think, is what we said. Okay. Because it doesn't want to be somebody who's necessarily at the end of their career. It's celebrating actually what they have done and, I guess, are doing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the other award, which really is for those architects who may have been, so not just that they're emerging, really, but that they might have been limited by either how much exposure they've had that we might not necessarily know about them as much. Mm. They may have been limited by the amount they've been able to build through circumstances there. And actually that this prize will hopefully unlock some of those things. And it's intentionally sort of looking at architects from different regions. So it is really, really international. So covering sort of four regions. And there's going to be four shortlisted architects then brought to London to then present, and then the awarding of that will happen
In the new building,
the new lecture theatre, yeah.
Lots to look forward to. That's amazing. Maybe then just to round up, I was kind of interested about outside of these walls, these hallowed walls, around London, kind of things that you find interesting, inspiring, engaging, kind of parts of the city, maybe favourite buildings, interesting parts of town. Is there anything particularly that you...
I think what I love most about London is sometimes just it's going out for a walk, and often you think you know certain parts of town, or you sort of think you know how they're related, and just that sense of launching off into a walk towards something, and what you discover along the way, and realizing how much it changes. Different sorts of architecture, the different sorts of people, the different way in which the city feels, and it can change very quickly. And I find that really fascinating, and how quickly areas change as well. Yeah. I mean, I think that there's we underestimate actually how quickly London changes.
Yeah.
And you can sort of turn away. I mean, it's in a year I can quite often not get to a certain part of town because it's so big. Yeah. You go back and it's just different. and that's driven by a whole lot of different things. And sometimes it's brilliant, and sometimes it's a bit disappointing, and sometimes it's deeply troubling. But I think it's lovely to keep looking at London and reading the layers in it, and I think that's always for me is the sort of connections or the unexpected things that I like the most.
Do you find it's more of an indoor city, maybe? I mean, Australians famously have this sort of slightly more outdoor lifestyle and appreciation of, the climate's there. I mean, London's has its kind of indoor spaces and its tucked away lanes and things. But do you think the kind of
there is definitely something about what's behind hidden doors and the life. You notice in winter everyone hibernates, and actually there's a kind of there is a cultivation of the spaces inside. I think that's quite different. Very different from Sydney in that way, which is about connecting. A lot of the spaces in Australia are about connecting to the outside, where actually spaces here are much more about protecting. Yeah. And I most definitely do find that. But that's also the kind of wonder, isn't it? It's amazing when you go through a door that you just didn't realise was there and finding out what's behind it. And
I'm so delighted to have come through these doors today and to have seen this room. I mean, that's... I haven't even begun to look at the ceiling. That's utterly amazing.
Yeah, it's great. It's good.
Fantastic. That's really great. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time.
You.
I mean, it's really, really fantastic. Thanks very much.
Bye.
That's great.
You've been listening to Architecture Masters, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture. My guest this week was Kate Goodwin, Head of Architecture at the Royal Academy of Arts. You can find out more about Kate and her work at architecturemasters.org. from where you can also subscribe to the podcast and follow us on Twitter. You can send any comments, questions, or suggestions to hello@architecturemasters.org. I'm Owen Wainhouse. Thank you for listening.